Welcome to the most listened to golf in the world, the Fairways of Life show, on air, online, and around the world. With the most candid interviews, unforgettable stories, taking you beyond the ropes. Here's your host, New York Times best-selling author and Golf Channel's Matt Adams.
I still hate live. I hope it goes away, and I would fully expect that it does.
In a way, what LIV has done, it's exposed flaws in the system of what golf has. I can't judge people for making that decision, and so if I regret anything, it was probably being too judgmental at the start.
So that clip you just saw, the latter part of it, was from a podcast that made really worldwide news yesterday, at least in the world of golf. It was called Stick to Football podcast. Sorry, that it has Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher, Jill Scott, Ian Wright, Roy Keane, all the members of, I guess, the rotating cast that they have, and many of them were part of it with Rory McIlroy. And because they were, I guess, former athletes, in the case of Roy Keane, childhood hero of Rory McIlroy's, they asked some questions, or at the very least, Rory answered questions in a manner that I thought was different than a typical press conference, where in a typical press conference, many times you deal in sound bites. Not that Rory, in my opinion, is always very forthcoming, but when you hear the contrast between what he said last summer, "I still hate LIV," which is a very, very strong statement, even though, in fairness to Rory, if you listen to the full context of even that interview, he talks about his mind starting and his emotions starting to settle as to the reality of where they're going. But then all of a sudden he goes down this "I hate LIV" road, which was, given the rest of his comments in that particular interview in June, which was immediately following the announcement of the efforts to put together a framework agreement, his comments, I think, were fairly conciliatory until that point. So at the risk of sensationalism, that point is of distinction. And the distinction to me is in the contrast to the entirety of his comments in the podcast, which leads me to say, is this a kinder, gentler 2024? Or is this a change of heart? And or is this a resignation? Very curious what you guys think, and there'll be much more on the podcast coming up in the show today. Now, out at the Century, there are some big names playing at the Century this week, and you can see just how beautiful this place is and some of those notable players there. Of course, Maui's still recovering from the devastating fires. Many efforts are being made to illustrate and support the funds that have been put together, the initiatives that are being made to help those in Maui recover from what was just horrific fires and very devastating loss of life, loss of property. And so in this case, this week, we get to highlight the beauty of Maui through its people and through the playing of this golf tournament, where, as you could see from that graphic that Andrew just put up, many of the big names are competing. And as we're getting into and opening the show today with this discussion of the drama that surrounds the game of golf, Patrick Cantlay was asked the question, what would your message be to fans that may be tired of the drama in golf?
I feel for the fan. There's been a ton of confusion, not only for players out on tour in the last year or two, but I can only imagine for the fan at home. And so I hope with having more of the best players play the same weeks, they know exactly which weeks are important and important to us players. And they get to see a lot more tournaments where the best players on tour are competing against each other down the stretch on Sunday, because I think that's what the fan really wants to see. I think the fans rooting for the attention to go back squarely onto golf and squarely onto the tournaments that are being played, and to forget all of this political non-golf talk, which has consumed a lot of the energy over the last couple of years.
What's interesting about Patrick's comments there are really twofold. One, where he said, we think the fans want to see the top players more often, right? Paraphrasing. Well, again, you have to qualify that by the top players on the PGA Tour. And then I also assume that what he's referring to there, because I don't have the context of the full conversation that he was in and the question asked accordingly, I assume that he's talking about signature events, which still illustrates the contrast that the PGA Tour has. It's a dichotomy, if you please, between its signature events and its non-signature events. Right? So I hope that the fans get what they're looking for and hoping for in these signature events. But I also hope, as a fan of the game of golf, that they find value in the non-signature events, which I don't think is actually talked about enough currently, because the focus is so much on saying, hey, we have this new shiny signature events. Aren't they great? Yeah, but there's a full season of golf. So that's Patrick Cantlay. And I thought, at least from the standpoint of, you know, someone that's like him, that's on the policy board, a prominent player globally, that he would be asked about the fans. Because it goes to my conversation I was having yesterday with you guys about, in that context, we were talking about the rollback of technology by the USGA and the RNA. And, you know, I asked the question, none of this works without you, without fans. And I asked a question to you guys, who represents you? When we talk about golf stakeholders, if I asked you who the stakeholders are in golf, you'd start to whip together a list pretty quickly. Oh, I'm sure it's the Masters. It's four majors, right? It's golf's governing bodies, PGA of America, PGA Tour, DP World Tour, you could say LIV, right? You'd put together a list pretty quick. Whereas I think the most important stakeholder in golf are fans. I'm not 100% certain who represents those interests, who speaks to those interests. So Xander Schauffele, I think, is a perfect place to pick up here, friend of Patrick Cantlay. He was asked about his reaction to Jon Rahm going to LIV. He was asked, do you think it will be beneficial to get all the best players back playing together again? And that's something that Rory McIlroy was asked about in his podcast, which we'll be getting to a little bit later on in the program today, about the prospect of saying, hey, you know, the possibility of the framework and how this comes together, might we have all the best players playing together again, which I think many of us hope to see in whatever way that defines itself. And then the first question that Xander was asked was this: how do you feel about the state of golf entering 2024?
It's tricky. I've really, every day you wake up, you pretty much, or me at least, I can speak to myself, I really try to, you know, help wherever I can and try to be effective. But when it comes to my personal golf, I've really tried to just dig in, really try and be selfish, really try and focus on what I can do to get better at playing golf. That's sort of why I love playing golf. So a lot of distractions. It's been like that for quite some time. Everyone sort of has their opinion and everyone floats around, but I can just speak to sort of what I've been trying to do, and that's really dig my head in the sand and trying to get back to sort of letting the clubs talk. It's better. I mean, we're entertainers at the end of the day. I mean, I love what I do for work, and I'm obsessed with my job, but at the end of the day, I am, you know, a small piece of a big puzzle, and I think everyone wants to see that puzzle sort of whole without missing pieces, and I think the product is probably better if all together than sort of split up, but I don't have the metrics on what that looks like or anything. I couldn't tell you if ratings are worse or better. I really put my head in the sand when I tell you that.
What was your reaction to Jon Rahm leaving for LIV?
I don't really have a whole lot to say on the matter, to be honest.
Interesting reaction from Xander Schauffele as to John Rahm leaving. Literally, palms in the air. I mean, that was just interesting. All right, Colin Morikawa was asked about how satisfied he is with the communication regarding the tour's future and then what to him would be the ideal outcome.
I'm like right in the middle. I'm like if you had a meal and you're like you're full, but you know you want something else, you want dessert. I'm sitting in that like zone. Look, I've not taken myself out. I still listen to all the meetings. I read up on everything that's going on. But at this point, all you can do is just play your best golf and show up and see what happens, right? I hope everything comes together and we're able to all play together at some point and in some time and in some way. But there's so much back and forth. You know, the emails we get, it's all fluff. Like, there's no point in reading these emails anymore that we get. Players are saying one thing and then they say something else some other time. At this point, I think just deals need to be made and we all need to get back to playing golf, right? It is what it is. Guys make their decision to go one way. I've never had an issue with it. I've never had an issue with anything, right? Everyone makes their own decision, but I do miss playing with everyone at one time. You know, that's why the majors have been fun over the past year or 2 years. Not that they're not fun, but it's nice to see some of these guys, right? Because that was normal when I turned pro. I never thought it was going to be anything different. Not that it takes away from these fields, not that it takes away from the PGA Tour, but there's great players in other parts of the world. And, I think we missed that.
There's already so much to unpack just from the comments in that brief 1 minute, 35 second cut from Colin Morikawa. My first observation is one of the things through the turbulence of the last couple of years in golf is that players are far more forthcoming and honest when they speak in front of microphones and cameras than I think they ever were comfortable in being before. Comfort in this case probably defined in large part by what can I say and cannot say without the risk of perhaps getting some type of a fine or a phone call, where you just heard a tour player say that he's not reading all the stuff that's coming out because of the fluff. Think about that for a second. Right? And the fact that Colin Morikawa, albeit a multiple-time major champion to his credit, still a very young man, talking about the fact of, yeah, when I first came out here, it was just a given that all the best players were playing together, particularly at the majors, and now it is something of distinction, which leads you to another observation, or me anyway, that, and I said this last year too, throughout all of this, if the players from LIV can get the access, which clearly there are players that are good enough players that they should be in the majors. So it is something to me that I've said multiple times. I think they need to figure that out. And if the gateway into the majors is primarily going to be through the world ranking points, they've got to figure that out. And the they is a collective. I'm not just throwing it solely on the official World Golf Ranking organization. I also think whatever LIV has to do, if you just figure it out. If you have to expand your field, okay. Ask your group. If you mind if we go to four rounds instead of three, if that's the answer. I don't know what it is. All I'm saying is there should be ranking points for players of that caliber. Because if that's going to be used as a gateway into the majors, we shouldn't have players of the caliber, for example, of the golf we saw from Taylor Gooch last year who was sitting on the sidelines. Makes no sense. But the broader picture to what Colin was talking about is that the majors last year got even better. And the reason why they got even better is because we were able to see all of the world's best players at the same place. And I thought that was very exciting. Now, yesterday there were also some awards announced. The Arnold Palmer Award is for the Player of the Year. And while you may think that in the context of 2023, Eric Cole burst through as an overnight success. Well, his overnight success was many, many years in the making.
I'm very happy to be here in Kapalua to start the year off, and it's a huge honor to win Rookie of the Year. It's, you know, an award in golf where you only get one chance to win it, which is a little bit unique, and to win that and be voted by my peers is pretty incredible, and it's, like I said, it's just a huge honor. You know, I was very lucky. Sam and I became friends, you know, probably when we were going into high school-ish, and I was lucky to spend a lot of time around Mr. Palmer, just around Bay Hill and a little bit up in Latrobe as well, and you know, he was such an incredible guy to be around, and so many great stories that he had, and to win an award named after him is just a huge honor, and it's something that is really special to me, and it's kind of a cool connection for sure. Yep.
I saw it, I forget where I saw it. I think it might have been Luke Donald that put it out on social media, where he said Ludwig Aubert is still eligible in 2024 for the Rookie of the Year award because of the number of events that was so few that he was able to play in 2023, even though he's had great success already. So he was making the observation that it is possible that the young Swede could emerge as both the Rookie of the Year and the Player of the Year because he is that skilled. It'll be fascinating to see that. Speaking of the Player of the Year, that was awarded to Scottie Scheffler. Remember, this vote comes from the players. Scottie Scheffler was asked a number of interesting questions, including with all the success that you've had over the last couple of years, how do you sort that up against the sadness of what happened at the Ryder Cup, not only as a team competition, but also for him. Remember, he and Brooks with the most lopsided loss in the history, just being part of it. He was asked about how then he does define success. How do you evaluate the season at the end of your, when you look back on your season, how do you do your evaluation of what was a successful season? And he started by talking about his thoughts about winning the Player of the Year.
Yeah, obviously an honor to receive the award. Anything that you receive a vote on by your peers is very special to me. And, you know, being able to go home with this trophy 2 years in a row now is very special. I think the body of work I put in last year with the consistency and finishing, you know, top all, most of the weeks that I played, I was very proud of that consistency. And so, I'm very appreciative of the award. Yeah, at the end of each season, I kind of sit back and look at things that I want to improve on. And last year, my ball striking was obviously very good, and my putting wasn't as good as I think it needed to be. And so when I look back at the season, that was one of the things that I kind of try to focus on in the off season. I usually have one aspect that I try to put a little bit of extra emphasis on, if that makes sense, to where I'm still always working on all aspects of my game. But throughout the off season, I have a little bit more time on my hands to focus on different things. And, you know, some years it's my diet. Some years it's been, you know, the time I want to put in the gym. You know, 1 year it was creating different shots. And then this year it was kind of the emphasis was placed on putting. And, you know, I put in a lot of work with Phil over the off season, and I'm excited to, you know, I saw a little bit of the fruits of that at the Hero. I had a nice putting week, and I feel like the ball's coming off my blade really nice right now, and I'm looking forward to, you know, coming out this week and just you know, seeing where I'm at. My priority list at the top, like how I define success, has always been my approach. If I show up to tournaments and I'm prepared and I'm ready to play and I show up with a good attitude and a good approach, so that means not getting too frustrated, not overthinking things, just trying to go out there and execute the shot and controlling what I can control, and that's my approach. Once I hit the ball, I can't control whether or not the putt's going to go in, whether it's going to hit a bounce, and, you know, bounce offline, or if I'm going to get gusted by the wind. All I can control is my approach, and when my approach and attitude are great, then that's a successful week. I mean, we went on vacation after the week. You know, we had some friends there, and, you know, life goes on. Life goes on after wins. Life goes on after losses. I try not to keep any of that stuff with me for too long. I mean, it was obviously a frustrating week, but you know, like I said, my attitude was good. I felt like my preparation was good as it could have been. And, you know, I just didn't perform. And that's part of my approach. Like, if I show up to a tournament and I feel like I've done everything I can to play well, and I go out there and I have a good attitude and I don't play well, that's okay. You know, I can't play good every week. I can't win every tournament. That's not my expectations. My expectations, my place on myself, is to go have a good attitude and be prepared. And then the rest isn't up to me. And so when it comes, you know, after having tough losses, yeah, you kind of just, life goes on. We went on vacation, and I went home and put up the clubs for about a month, which was great, and then, you know, got back to work.
All right, so some of the featured tee times from some of the gents that you've heard from just now. Patrick Cantlay will tee off at 2:21 p.m. Eastern. Xander Schauffele at 12:45 Eastern time. Morikawa also at 12:45. And then Scottie Scheffler at 4:39 p.m. Eastern time. There on your screen, you can see the air times of the Century. Thursday and Friday, you can catch the coverage on Golf Channel, and it will start at 6 p.m. Eastern time. On Saturday and Sunday, it will be on NBC from 4 p.m. and then back on Golf Channel again at 6 p.m. until the conclusion of play on those respective days. ESPN Plus gets underway today. Everything kicks off earlier today, so earlier than the network coverage, as you guys are aware. ESPN Plus has multiple different feeds of the PGA Tour week in and week out. As to the radio side, PGA Tour radio can be heard on the PGA Tour app. It can be heard on PGATour.com, or you can catch the coverage on Sirius XM, and there you can see that it is starting along with those first tee times on both Thursday, Friday, and over the weekend, and carrying you through the event that is taking place out in Hawaii. More of the Fairways of Life show coming up. When we come back, we're going to dive into Rory McIlroy, his comments on the Stick to Football podcast, which didn't in having Rory McIlroy on, and we're the beneficiary of it for getting some insight into where his heart and mind is right now.
Relax. Easy now. Find your happy place. The PGA Tour Superstore. It's all in the hips. Where every swing is possible. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find all the latest gear, apparel, and personalized club fittings.
Is this goodbye?
We've only just begun.
Shop with the pros at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
In Ireland, golf is more than just a game. Come and experience our world-famous links courses and our world-famous parkland courses, all set alongside world-famous scenery. And visit our world-famous historic sites. And while you're here, enjoy our world-famous hospitality. Fill your heart with Ireland at ireland.com/golf.
It screams. It tracks. It's soft. It reacts. It is the Bridgestone Tour B with a game-changing reactive cover designed to spring faster off your driver and stick longer to your wedges. Try Bridgestone's Tour Bs, the Tour Ball reinvented.
The Gen 6 iron is a culmination of everything that we have learned as a team, the absolute best golf club I've ever hit. It's something special. Say hello to the new PXG Gen 6 iron. The longest, most accurate irons we've ever made. They go higher and farther than any iron that I have hit to date, and they're so easy to hit. Super excited for the consumer to try this. They're gonna love them.
PXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Baseball? Nah. Football? Done it. I think I'm gonna go after the PGA Tour.
Bo, you're gonna need the right equipment company.
I think I got that.
You know, Tour Edge backs all their clubs with a lifetime warranty.
I know.
They ship all their premium custom clubs in 48 hours.
I know.
All their premium clubs are hand-built in the USA.
I know.
You know, Tour Edge has won 35 times out here.
Guys, I know.
Pound for pound, nothing comes close.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to BoyneGolf.com.
All right, welcome back to the Fairways of Life show. Pleasure to have your company on this Thursday. I thought it was incredibly revealing, the podcast conversation with Rory McIlroy. And as Rory became kind of the, what do you call him, flagship spokesman for the PGA Tour over the last, call it at least year and a half, maybe more, relative to the PGA Tour and what, you know, what initially with Liv and the PGA Tour happened was that there were military terms that were being used. I refused to use them, and because I thought it was ridiculous, to tell you the truth. But there were oftentimes military terms, you know, like if a player left and went to Live, it was very typical that the way that it would be written or spoken off script would be to say that so-and-so defected to Live. And many times it was talked about as golf's war, etc. I mean, you know, these, which, as we're living in a world that has real war and real strife and real death, real horrors, I think it's incredibly disingenuous to try to use words that are related to military, related to conflict, related to war, when we're talking about it in a sports context. I'm not sure if I feel as strongly about it with the comments I just made when someone talks about survival, even though it's applicable to the same mentality. But in this case, I do think that we got to a point where there were honest emotions expressed where, and I think it was pretty much the PGA Tour because of the money that was involved, where they said they couldn't survive a fight. Different people phrasing it that way. They couldn't survive a fight against the sovereign fund because it was basically an unlimited source of funds. How I'm sure I'm going to paraphrase it, but how did the commissioner say that if this is a, I think he may have used the word war, that is, and the weapons are is money, we can't compete or something. Somebody has the exact quote much better than that, but that was the gist of it. So Rory comes on this Stick to Football podcast. It's an original series from The Overlap. Gary Neville, Jamie Carragher, Jill Scott, Ian Wright, Roy Keane. It's a show where they bring in these special guests and they're focusing on football. And Rory is of the European variety, right? Rory is a huge Man United fan. And so you're going to hear in the two clips that Dom put together from the podcast, and again, I want to make sure that the credit on this is properly given because I thought it was fascinating and they deserve it because it was extremely well done, Stick to Football podcast, where Rory McIlroy gets into his perspective current on Liv, and then we'll talk about how that perspective may have evolved.
So I think the one thing for me is golf has always been built on meritocracy. You shoot the scores, you rise up the ranks, and you get rewarded accordingly. And I think what's, in a way, what Liv has done, it's exposed flaws in the system of what golf has, because we're all supposed to be independent contractors, and we can sort of basically pick and choose what tournaments we want to play. But I think what Liv and the Saudis have exposed is, okay, well, if you have, you know, a tour and you're going and you're asking sponsors for millions of dollars to sponsor these events and you're not able to guarantee those sponsors the players that are going to show up, you know, it's very hard. I can't believe they've done so well for so long. Yeah. So it's actually exposed some flaws in the system that hopefully golf will have a look at more. Okay, well, if we're going to ask these people for so much money, we need to be able to guarantee them what they're getting. And I think that was part of the stuff that we've been trying to do for the last 2 years to figure out, okay, how can we basically try and bring the thing back together again and learn from some of the things that have happened and some of the stuff that Liv has exposed. And yeah, I feel like there was a way to do it where it wasn't going to be this massive disruptor to the game. And I think that's the other thing to me. It's like, it's created this massive upheaval in professional golf, which has been sad to see, and it's like some people have taken one side, some people have taken another, and golf's a small enough sport. It's not like football where you've got billions of fans. So if you start dividing the eyeballs in professional golf, it's no good for anyone. It's just going to cannibalize itself. Well, so competition is good, right? It makes people... but at the same time, I think with the PGA Tour trying to compete with LIV and the Saudis' money is like completely unsustainable. They can't do that. They just, it's not, you know, you're never going to win a fight if you're just, you know, money for money, because I think we've seen in all sport, like, there's no one spending like the Saudis. So how can you tilt the odds in your favor so that you can make your product better, that you can make fans want to engage more with what you're doing? I think that's how the PGA Tour can, I don't want to say win this fight, because, you know, there's negotiations going on and everyone trying to come back together, which I think would be good for golf. But it put the PGA Tour in a position where they had to spend a lot of money that maybe put them on a path that was unsustainable. And now you're seeing some sponsors are pulling out because the tour are asking for so much money, and the sponsors like,
we can't afford that.
We can't afford it. We can't, you know, asking us to pay 20, 25 million an event to sponsor this thing. I mean, it's, you know, if they're not seeing the value in it and they're not seeing, okay, well, if you can guarantee me that the top 50 guys are going to come and play in my event that week, then fine. But if you can't guarantee me that, then I'm not going to give you that money.
I mean, you've been quite outspoken about it yourself, and probably Tiger Woods has seen as the two on this side. A lot of golfers have gone to live. When you're talking about now, they could actually come together.
Yeah.
If they do come together, why would you not then be part of LIV?
So I think
and get the, you know, sort of like the finances that these other players are getting, which is astronomical.
Well, I think you would in the end, because if LIV are, so the thing that I've come to realize is, okay, if you've got people or a sovereign wealth fund wanting to spend money in your sport, ultimately that's a good thing, but you just want to maybe get them to spend it the right way and to spend it on things that are important in the game. So instead of giving someone $100 million, why don't you put $50 million into a grassroots program for the RNA or the USGA so that you can actually help whenever they say growing the game, you know, spending that money elsewhere to actually grow the game and not just try to buy talent, I think would be a way better way to spend that money.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's at the end of the day, we're professional golfers. We play golf to make a living and make money. I absolutely understand it, especially some of these guys that were on like the back end of their career.
Yeah,
absolutely. Like I don't begrudge anyone for going and taking that money and doing something different, but don't try to burn the place down on your way out.
Yeah,
right. You know, I think that's sort of my attitude towards it, because some people are happy playing, you know, in the existing structure, and that's totally fine too. But I think it's just created this division that hopefully will stop in the near future, because I think it's the best thing for golf.
What about the golfer who's just moved, I think, in the last probably few weeks, John Rahm?
Yeah.
And it feel like he was so strong and aligned with you, you know, on this side. I mean, how did you feel personally when he's jumped across?
I think at this point with the, so this whole framework agreement and the sort of merger news back in June, I think what happened is the tours legitimized what LIV was trying to do. So it made it easier for guys to jump. You know, John Rahm's not got any of the heat that the first guys got for going. So it's made it easier for guys to jump. And I think John, you know, he's smart, and I think he sees things coming together at some point. So it's like, okay, I, you know, take a lot of upfront money, which is his prerogative. He can absolutely do that. And if things come together, I'll just, you know, I'll maybe play LIV for a year, come back, play on the tour, and maybe play some team golf on the sort of fringes. So I thought it was quite, you know, it's a smart business move. It's opportunistic. I think he sees that things will come back together. And, you know, and he's in a lucky position. He's exempt for all the majors. There's not one person that wouldn't want them on our Ryder Cup team because of, you know, how good he is. So he was in a great position where there wasn't a ton of risk involved for him to go. But I've no problem with John going. If that's what he wants to do and he thinks that's the right decision for him and his family, then, you know, who am I to say any different at this point?
So that's just part one of the two pieces that Don put together from the Stick to Football podcast that Rory McIlroy was obviously on recently. So I wrote down just to some notes that struck me as he was speaking. And this kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about comments from Colin Morikawa that we featured for you, where he was talking about, I don't even read this stuff anymore. It's all fluff, right? Remarkably, really honest comments. And Rory speaks with candor as well. And one of the things that he said when he, and we used it at the start of the show, this little clip where he goes, live exposed flaws. Right? Where you'd golf churning along by any definition. And it was very strong and strong-fisted at times, depending on which governing body we're talking about or which event we're talking about or events, what have you. And he's saying live exposed flaws. Because from a starting standpoint, that's what kind of started everything down this road. I mean, that's really what Phil Mickelson was trying to do when he was making his initial comments. He did it in his typical Phil way, and it failed at that time, where Phil likes to plant the seed and let it grow into something else. And he tried to do that with this one, but he didn't package it in the correct way. And ultimately, with Alan Shipnuck's revelations a couple months later, it all turned on him because people saw that the Phil Mickelson they thought they knew was not necessarily the Phil Mickelson that was behind the scenes. But when you talk about what Phil was saying, not how he said it, he was talking about flaws. And Rory McIlroy just said, live exposed flaws. I was pretty fascinated by that. I was fascinated when he said, I can't believe they've done so well for so long. And what he was talking about there was going out and getting people to engage in an event. He was talking about in the context of sponsors in this case, but even if you talk from a fan's perspective, what have you, he was saying, yeah, we're going to have an event. We're going to know when we get, you know, the Friday before the event, and we may know along the way who's going to be there. But other than that, that's about all we can guarantee you. But we need you to, you know, put this up. And he has, quote, can't believe they've done so well for so long. Fascinating when you think about this. And as to the efforts with the framework agreement and what it can be on the other side of those efforts, where he said, paraphrasing, everyone trying to come back together, which I think is good for golf. Further, when he was asked about, and eventually it was specific with John Rahm, he said, these are all quotes, I don't begrudge anyone for taking the money. Would that have been, would you have come to that conclusion that Rory McIlroy felt that way given the clip from his June comments? Would you have come to that conclusion where he said, I hate Liv, right? The one I opened the show with today. Would you have felt that way prior to that? Would you have felt that, given all his comments, well, Rory still wouldn't begrudge anybody for taking the money? That's exactly what he just said, right? And bear in mind, I'm not illustrating the contrast in his comments to try to expose in some way a disingenuous perspective. What I'm exposing here is I think, and it's not me exposing it, I'm just discussing it, but I think what we're seeing here is an evolution in thinking. I think it's mind and heart. And frankly, I think it's very, very healthy. And I'm saying that to you because we live in a world today where we try to pigeonhole people to say, you said, right? That's the red state, blue state world that we live in today. You said you're painted in that corner. That's where you have to stay forever. Well, wait a minute. Is it okay that I've learned or I've spoken to people or I've changed my mind? Is that allowed in today's world? That my thinking has evolved in some way? Or no? If you said it once, you're done. That's it. Is that healthy? Is that what learning really is about? When it comes to John Rahm, This was fascinating. This was at the end of that part one we just played. We have another part to play for you, too, which we get to, where he was talking about John Rahm, and he said, the framework legitimized what Liv is trying to do. This was the announcement of the framework agreement that he was referring to. It legitimized what Liv is trying to do. And as to John Rahm, he spoke of it as a smart business move, which to me, I would interpret that along the lines of what my thoughts were on it yesterday. I think they're aligned here in terms of philosophy, which is to say, if you've been offered an absolutely massive sum of money, massive, knowing that the two organizations are involved in negotiations right now to become one, so you might literally get the massive check and have the prospect of playing once again in the events that you would like to play in on the tour side, the PGA Tour side, and probably because of the comments of Rory McIlroy, which would equate to pressure, he's saying we got to find a way to keep John Rahm in the Ryder Cup. Rory called that a smart business move. We're back with part two on the Fairways of Life show right after this.
I guess hello world, huh?
And with one subtle hello, Tiger began an amazing and unthinkable career.
I've done it for 20 years now with Bridgestone. It allows me to play an aggressive style around the greens, and it's allowed me to win a lot of tournaments.
Bridgestone Golf, proud to be part of your journey.
Boyne Golf provides the ultimate world-class golf destination with 10 championship-caliber courses spanning three resorts. Centered in Michigan's northern Lower Peninsula, the courses are the products of some of the game's masters, including Robert Trent Jones Sr., Arthur Hills, and Donald Ross. From the all-inclusive vacation packages, elite instruction with the Boyne Golf Academy, tournaments, and so much more, Boyne Golf truly offers an unrivaled Michigan golf vacation experience. Just log on to boynegolf.com.
I think when you're training for other sports or why most people go to the gym is so that they can like have muscles and, you know, be strong and be healthy. And a lot of the reason why they struggle to play golf is their body doesn't move properly for them to be able to hit a golf ball. And when you're training for golf, it's a little bit different because you're focused more on flexibility and mobility and being strong in motion. When you're able to kind of have a warm up and have a workout routine and kind of gradually build up to where you're training your body to move properly, yeah, you're going to get a lot of big dividends on the golf course.
Easy now. Find your happy place. The PGA Tour Superstore. It's all in the hips. Where every swing is possible. Just tap it in.
Yes!
Find all the latest gear, apparel, and personalized club fittings.
Is this goodbye?
We've only just begun.
Shop with the pros at Golf's Happy Place, the PGA Tour Superstore.
What if we started a company and the company was under no time constraints, no financial constraints? The one constraint is their clubs had to be exceptional performers and much better than any other alternative. I was told time and again, it'll never work. It worked like a house of fire. And I'll tell you what, I think our customers love it. BXG, nobody makes golf clubs the way we do, period.
Zero Friction introduces the Wheel Pro Pushcart Golf Bag with its revolutionary 3-in-1 design, supportive legs that spring into action, a comfort grip handle with 3 locking positions, accessories for the modern golfer enhanced by 7 pockets for more storage, and removable all-terrain wheels which slide right into place. The new Zero Friction Wheel Pro Golf Bag checks every box for every golfer. Push, carry, or cart, the decision is yours thanks to Zero Friction. Head to ZeroFriction.com today. All right, welcome back to the show. As we get into part number two here, Dom, what are you hearing? What's coming in from the people today on this Thursday?
There's a tremendous amount coming in, obviously, with the avalanche of news that continues to just happen in golf. I mean, December was insane, which is unusual for December in golf. We've been doing this for 15 years, and it's just usually a time of year when nothing happens, and instead everything happened. And here we are, we're 3 or 4 days into the new year, And, you know, they were talking a lot about the Chamblee and no laying up beef. They're still discussing.
I don't know what that is.
With each other.
What was the NLU and Chamblee beef? I don't even know what that's about.
They're just arguing about commercials. I don't know what they're talking about in the chat. They're going back and forth. It's like comparing apples to steaks, in my opinion. I mean, you're talking about. They're complaining about commercials. Chamblee is saying to No Laying Up, oh, you got commercials during your podcast. And No Laying Up's like, oh, well, you got way more commercials during live coverage. Well, live coverage and a TV show or a podcast are like, they have nothing to do with each other. They're completely separate. Anyway, they're talking about that. They're talking a little bit about the USGA, obviously, with the news of the rollback, which we are going to get into ad nauseum over the next several weeks. There's a lot to discuss. It's a lot of layers. It's very interesting. And then obviously they're commenting now. I'll read a few of the comments here coming in about, we just played part one of Rory. We have part two coming up in just a second. I had a hard time editing it, to be honest, because it was well over an hour long and there was a tremendous amount of fascinating pieces of intel that Rory shared during that interview. So I did the best I could to whittle it down into the stuff that I thought, especially with us being golf-centric, what's the most important? What's the most interesting? And that was just part one. Let's see here. We've got stuff coming in here. Deuce says, I'm all set with Rory Hardpass. Not a fan of Rory McIlroy, I see. There's some comments coming in about Tiger. Tiger, there's some people thinking that Tiger's waiting to sit back to see who's going to end up with control of PGA Tour enterprises and then court them so that they make sure they have a seat at the table. Doesn't it bother you guys that the LIV players were bought? ? We've got.
Whoa! Hold on a second on that. If he's asking us,
they're just asking each other and us, I guess. You know, everybody.
Okay.
It's not a question for you necessarily. I think it's a question to the group. But we're part of the group, right?
But I mean, to that question, does it bother you that the LIV players were bought? It's a different structure of the game of golf where Rory spoke about it in that first segment that golf had traditionally been set on a meritocracy. But if you start to get into the details of that meritocracy, the European Tour has had appearance fees for years. If you're paying an appearance fee for a player to come to your event, is that buying that player? Okay, maybe it is for having their appearance there. Does it strengthen the event? Does it strengthen your relationship? Does it keep a sponsor, perhaps? But then after that, are they starting out the event at 5-under and everyone else is starting at level par? They still have to go out and perform. They still have to hit the high notes to be the star that's going to get that. So from that standpoint, if it's a completely different animal where they put together a league and said, we need these stars. And we're willing to pay for them. So from that standpoint, I guess that my answer to that question is, for the context of who LIV is, and it's not like they kept it secret from us, they flat out said, we're going to pay stars a guaranteed amount to be here. That's how we're going to guarantee that they're here.
And I think a lot of people chimed in here echoing your comments. Manesh says, all my favorite sports players are bought. Michael says, what choice did LIV had if they wanted to have an immediate impact and have their lead taken seriously? Paul says, they are pros, play for money. They are contracted to play for LIV in a sport that's not unusual. LC says, a professional player accepting the most lucrative deal is the norm in any other sport. David then says, PGA Tour players are not paid to show up. They are not bought. None of the new guys that qualified via the LIV Promotions tournament are getting a signing bonus. They're just getting the purse money only. So it's just a fascinating discussion. There's a lot of layers to it.
Says,
what's the purpose of PGA Tour's PIP? It's sort of to take care of what you're talking about.
Well,
it's
not only that, but what about the signature events?
Yeah. Well, Rory talked about it. The $25 million, the sponsors, the cost for everybody. It's not sustainable, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, we can get into it more, and I don't know if this is a path you want to go down, but my concern with this is for the sport. My concern is that the sport is getting too fractured, and the sport is not ginormous. There's not an unbelievably massive fan base watching all these sports. I know people watching this show, oh, I watch a lot of the tour events, and oh, there's a lot of people watching the live events. There's really not a lot of people watching any of the events. You know, these events are getting a few million people watching these tournaments.
Yep, that's a lot for our little sport.
So if you just continue to fracture it out, it's going to be nothing. It's going to become a problem, and then no one's going to be able to get sponsors.
I don't think the pie's...
Because if you've got seven different things going on, it's going to be a problem.
I don't think the pie, in terms of the people that are consuming it, is growing rapidly, although they're trying to make it grow by they're trying to go younger with who they're appealing to. But what happens a lot of times in the game of golf is that while the pie is the pie, how big your piece of the pie is what changes from one year to the next. What else you got from the people? Then we'll get to number two, part two.
The signing bonuses are reserved for the name players over. No name guys don't get that. They only get what they earn. I agree, G. Willis says, I agree with Matt that many of us felt that Rory seemed to be a little naive with his position and opinion from the beginning. I mean, that's an endless supply. We can play part two and then come back to this if you'd like, but it's just amazing to me, the emotional attachment.
That's why we love our people.
On both sides. They're just so, it matters so much.
It's awesome. And to your point where you talked about the fracturing of the game, all of this discussion on every level, macro or micro, is about trying to bring together the game, trying to ease some of that fracturing of the game. So in part two of this podcast that Rory McIlroy was on, that's called Stick to Football Podcast. And I want to make sure that we give full credit because I think they did an excellent job. It's beautifully produced. It's got some huge names. If you're a fan of the English Premier League and these players that played for various teams along the way, also huge names. Roy Keane, as I mentioned, was Roy's childhood hero. He started the whole podcast with this funny story about asking Roy for his autograph when he was just a kid and Roy blew him off. And if you get a chance to see the full podcast, you'd enjoy that exchange as well. So in part two, again, you got professional athletes who played for money, contracts, the teams that they joined because it was the best contract, et cetera, who they were traded to in some cases, et cetera. And they asked him to start out about what are we talking about in terms of money and live?
I think it's the guaranteed part of it, which is, you know,
what
golfers
guarantee,
never...
How does it work? What do they do? Guarantee you an upfront sort of like signing on pay?
Yeah, like a contract. So, okay, you come and play for Live Golf for 5 or 6 years and you have a contract and we'll pay you whatever it is per year. Plus, then you're going to compete for this prize money as well. So
what would the numbers be for that signing on?
It depends. I don't know, but I mean, you know, there's numbers being touted for John Rahm, you know, upwards of $300-$500 million for, you know, that's what the numbers are.
Mm.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, again, like you get.
Have you turned that down then?
No, I've never had an offer.
You just didn't welcome the offer?
Just didn't engage. Just didn't engage because it's something that, and I think at this point, like I'm, you know, I've pretty much set my stall out, and
did you get that now?
I can see the question coming up for you, buddy. I can see the question.
Think you've been a bit hasty, Rory.
No.
But
it's unbelievable.
But it is. I know the numbers are, but it's happening in everything, right? Like obviously all the stuff that's happening in football, F1. You know, they're getting into sport, and they, you know. Yeah, they're getting the World Cup in 2034. You know, so they're making a huge splash in the entire world of sport, and you know, no different than what, you know, the UAE have done in the past, and and other countries.
Do you worry that you can just be distracted by that instead of going, I just want to concentrate?
Absolutely. Like I've been, you know, for the last 2 years, I've been trying to fight the good fight and
right.
all this stuff, and at this point, I'm like, well. I mean, like, I'm not that I've wasted. I've played well the last couple of years, and I've done. You know, I'm in a good spot, but it's still,
you know, it's not my job. At the end of the day, my job is to go out there and try to shoot the lowest score possible.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're losing the fight a little bit now? Because everyone, because people like John Rahm have gone over, people who were actually on your side to start with.
Yeah, so I think I've basically went through the last 2 years with this like altruistic approach of, I've sort of looked at the world in the way I've wanted to see it, instead of just sort of, you know, going through life with, I've accepted reality, basically, like, this is what's going to happen, and you can say what you want and do what you want, but at the end of the day, you're not going to be able to change people's minds. You're never going to be able to make them to make a decision based on what you say. So I don't feel like I've lost a fight, but I've just accepted the fact that this is part of our sport now. And
you wouldn't have done anything different. You know, if this came again, it's not like you'd say, right, I'm not going to make this stance myself because a lot of the guys are probably going to slip off.
Yeah.
It seemed like you're on your own in it.
Yeah, I think at this point it's like I'm not, I was maybe a little, I was probably judgmental of the guys that went at the start. And I think that was a bit of a mistake on my part, because I now realize not everyone's in my position or in Tiger's position. And, you know, you get this offer and it's, you know, what do you do? It's, you know, we all turn professional to make a living playing the sports that we do. And I think that's what I realized over the last 2 years. I can't judge people for making that decision. And so if I regret anything, it was probably being too judgmental at the start. But to me, I'm just sick of the money talk in golf. It's like, because the fans don't care.
Yeah.
They just want to watch good golf and watch people compete against each other. And, you know, they don't care if you're making this or this guy's on 200 grand a week. It doesn't resonate.
Do you feel stitched up? You said you felt like a sacrificial lamb, because you were the PGA's basically front man fighting this, and they were as vocal as you were. You were the main voice fighting this. But then they've gone and got into bed with Liv. Do you just feel completely deflated and let down by it now?
No, not really. So I met Yasser at the end of last year in 2022 in Dubai, and just said, look, what do you want? What is it in golf that, you know, what do you want to do? So we had a really good chat, and we talked about, you know, he loves the game, and he wants to do certain things. He thinks the team element in golf can really, you know, take off and try to build franchise value in some of these teams. And, you know, I understood some of it. So when I got back to America at the start of this year, I was on the board of the PGA Tour, and I said to the guys, like, someone's got to go, you know, talk to this guy. So then there was a plan put in place that one of the board members would try to develop a relationship with him, see if we can try to figure something out, and we can all move forward together. So I knew that there was conversations being had, but I didn't know that it would happen so quickly. And then obviously on June 6th, the framework agreement was announced, and, you know, a lot of the players were angered by it because they were completely blindsided by it.
Were you blindsided? Because you're on the board. How could you?
So I was... I guess I knew it was a very intimate group of people. It was the commissioner of the PGA Tour, it was Yasser, and it was two board members.
Right.
The chairman of the board of the PGA Tour and another guy. And I knew there was conversations being had, but I didn't know, you know, it went from, they met in April and they got this agreement done in June. So it happened very, very quickly. And people were just like, what has gone on? You know, because the PGA Tour were telling all their players, you know, these are the bad guys that are coming to take over our tour, or this, and then
all of a sudden,
2 months later, it's like, oh, we're actually going to do a deal with them.
And you resigned then, didn't you?
I resigned at the end of this year, but it was more to do with, it was just taking up too much of my time. I just want to get back to being a golfer and playing golf and trying to, you know, win those tournaments that I dreamed about winning as a kid. So that was that was the reason for that. But it was also, you know, I hope everyone comes back together and people put their, you know, because the one thing is, you've got guys on both sides that don't want it to happen for certain reasons. The Liv guys don't really want to come back and play the PGA Tour because they don't feel like they've been treated very well. Right. Some of the PGA Tour guys don't want things to come back together because they don't want to see those other guys. So it's a really weird, so people, I think at this point, need to put their egos and their feelings aside and come back together, and we all move forward, because that would be what would be the best thing for golf.
Again, fascinating comments from Rory McIlroy. The podcast he was on is called Stick to Football. It's an original series from The Overlap, and we thank them for doing an excellent job with the production. So some of the comments from Rory in part two that stuck out to me, and I'm curious, I'll touch base with Dom in a second here and find out what you guys are thinking about before we wrap up on this Thursday, where he got into the whole thing where he said, I've been trying to fight the good fight, dot, dot, dot. He ultimately said, it's not my job, which was interesting from that perspective. When he was asked about kind of regrets, where he said, I was judgmental, and that was a little bit of a mistake on my part. And then he went on to say, I regret being too judgmental. And I know that's getting a lot of play on social media, and that I saw that last night. I also thought that it was particularly pertinent, and I thought well observed, where Rory spoke about that the fans don't care about money. And I happen to think when we're talking about professional sports, that's critically important. So that, for example, when you're talking about how much players are playing for in a purse, or how much a player did or did not sign for, or what they get paid by a sponsor, etc. When you're talking about professional sports, how long ago? Years ago? Decades ago? Professional sports money became monopoly money. It had no real connection. You know, I can remember back in the days when they used to play the Skins game over Thanksgiving weekend. And I remember Jack Nicklaus having some big putt that was worth $300,000+. And I remember, you know, there were putts that were, in those days and at that event, these individual putts were for like the most, worth the most money on one individual putt, which is hard to say because you make a putt to win a prize money, which is still higher than that back in the day. It would seem like that one, that birdie someone made in 18 was worth more than that. But I'm talking about in that one particular context and, you know, Jack throwing his putter and making the putt, you know, all that. I don't really think that exists anymore. I don't think we as fans buy into, oh, this putt's going to be worth $20 million or $5 million or $100 million, whatever it is. It's monopoly money. So I think whenever the focus starts to be on the money, I think we all roll our eyes. Right, even when they start the conversations of a so-and-so was signed for this amount of money and everybody gets up in arms, it's too much money for a golfer to be paid, what have you. Your value in the marketplace in any job is how much someone's willing to pay you to do that job. That's your value in the marketplace. It may not be tied to what the average wage is for someone doing that job. Someone's willing to pay you what they're willing to pay you. Would you take it? So I thought that was just an interesting observation. If you're going to build a campaign based upon money that professional athletes are getting paid, I think it's a short-lived one, because I just don't see how regular fans connect with knowing, thank goodness so-and-so is getting that much money. If it's good for you, good. His comment that in Rory's case, he just wants to get back to being a golfer. Again, I thought it was interesting. And I thought he did a pretty good job of explaining the why part of that. I'm still hungry for more in terms of coming to that conclusion. I just want to get back to being a golfer. Did he feel like he took on too much of a leadership role? He spoke, I told you the comments about him feeling like he had some regrets of being too judgmental. But did he feel like he took on that leadership role? Did he feel like he was thrust in that leadership role? Did he feel like he had to be in that leadership role? And was his emotion more so based upon what we heard today, that it was a futile effort? Remember in part one, we said you really can't change people's minds? All of that's interesting. All of it's really interesting. It just, again, I go back to what I asked you guys a segment ago. When you're talking about Rory 7 months ago, a year ago, a year and a half ago. And listening to the Rory that you heard from today, is that the same Rory? And let me underscore again and make sure this is crystal clear. I'm not judging the Rory you just heard from. I'm not pointing out and saying, oh, these are inconsistencies with what was said before. That's why I asked you guys the question. Is this a change of heart? Is this an evolution? In some cases, I think he himself would probably define it as a resignation to this reality that this entity is going to exist. You can't make it unexist by expressing your discontent with it. We saw many, many people do that, and they could not overcome the power that comes with the money that is behind it. It spoke louder than words, frankly. And then the comment that Rory made at the end about bringing the game back together when he said, he's talking about players, and he's quoting, need to put their egos aside and come back together, close quote. Again, think about what I just said and think about who just said that. It's quite fascinating. I'm sure there's going to be some people, as Dom noted, where we said, no, I'm all done, hard pass, blah, 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 what have you. I think the game will be in a better place if the game finds a way to come back together. And I think part of that has to be a learning process, a realization, a revelation, in some cases a resignation, to realize that we do not have to love, we do not have to approve of all of the elements. And I'd like to know what sport you do, where you know all of the owners and you know all the people behind the scenes and you just think everything is exactly the way you'd like to see it. I'm not being naive. I'm not saying that that will necessarily be the case. But what I am saying is that the game together is a lot better than the game split apart. Dom, what are you hearing from the people before we wrap up?
I'll read a few comments here to wrap things up. Obviously, there's a ton coming in, and we appreciate it. If you hit that like button, it actually helps us quite a bit, so feel free to do so. G. Willis says, I'm personally impressed that Rory did this because it takes courage to admit that he's been a little wrong and a little judgmental. I'll shake his hand, given the next opportunity to shake his hand. Let's see. NBT3 writes, the players were clearly lied to. They are left out in the cold. At worst, they should get a collective bargaining agreement. It's the players' fault, Greg says, for not striking to get a CBA. Kevin says, I would not be surprised to see the PGA Tour players unionize and have a CBA, very similar to all the other sports and athletes. LC says, this is hilarious watching Rory talking down someone getting a guaranteed salary and then also competing for prize money to a room full of footballers whose entire careers had that exact same structure. That's funny. So there's a lot, there's so much more I could read, Matt. And we appreciate you guys commenting and being part of the show. And I mean, we could talk about this for 14
No hours. Doubt about that. Let's give you the airtimes one more time of the golf that is coming up today. The Century can be found on Golf Channel from 6 p.m. Eastern Time tonight, Saturday and Sunday, 4 o'clock on NBC, and 6 p.m. back on Golf Channel. ESPN Plus is getting underway today. Multiple streams for the Century on the digital side, so make sure that you catch. Remember, there's multiple streams week in and week out in the coverage of PGA Tour Live on ESPN Plus. And then on the radio side, you can find it on Sirius XM if you subscribe to the National Satellite Service in North America. You can also get it for free on the PGA Tour app and on PGAtour.com, and those latter two work around the globe. Coverage today at 12:30 of the Century on the radio side. Thank you so much for your company, folks. It was a pleasure to be with you. Awesome to be back and broadcasting again in 2024. We'll see you again on Monday and go through everything that took place. Bye for now.